Hello, welcome to episode 9 of The Matchup, a storytelling podcast from St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where you, the listener, gets to decide who told the most compelling story. I'm your host, Jason Franklin, and today we have back with us the Reverend Nick Van Horn and Dr. Mark Audrey Graves. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Good. Hello. Morning. Good afternoon.
How are y'all doing?
Fine.
It's been a while since you've been on the show, I think.
It has.
It's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
But people are going to get sick of us soon.
Yes. Right. For those of you who do not know, which would be everybody listening at this point, we are going to do several episodes of Nick and Mark. So you get to decide who's going to be the champion and who isn't. Mark, you feeling good about your topic?
I'm feeling very good about my topic.
Yeah, he's been talking smack to me for weeks. And I'm like, I literally am like, oh, let me go over this 5 minutes beforehand because that's been my day. And Mark's like, I'm so ready.
Well, we'll see. The odds, the irony is Nick is going to toast me.
No, so. I don't know about that. Well, I might not win, but I'm definitely going to tear you down, Mark. That's why we're here.
That's what church is all about.
So today we are playing a little bit of matchup catch-up, like that little rhyming thing I did there.
Yeah,
it's pretty clever,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Originally, today's episode was supposed to come out during Spooky October, but we had to postpone. And even though Halloween has just passed, I think there's still a little room for some more spooky stories. This episode is coming out just after what's called All Hallowtide, and that includes Halloween, All Saints Day, and All Souls Day. Mark, as all things liturgy master, what's the importance of these 3 days to the church?
It's, in a nutshell, reminds us, thank you, Nick,
sorry,
that the church is more than the people that we see immediately around us right now. That we have, I mean, to use the fancy language, we have the church militant, the church expectant, and the church triumphant.
Right.
And all of these groups of believers and people who are trying their best are held in God's hands, whether we are alive on earth now or elsewhere. Right. And so these days as a group kind of help us to remember that the church is a very, very large company.
Great. Anything else to add, Nick?
He's wrong. We haven't started yet.
No, you're not competing yet.
No. I do appreciate us talking about it in the sense that, and to add to that, what Mark said so well is that there's this idea of all these secular things that we have, these secular beats we have annually, and people forget that a lot of them actually come from the church's intention to, you know, observe all these different things. And Halloween and All Saints and All Souls is one of those things. And somewhere down the road, and we'll talk a little bit about it with my topic, is it got not just secularized, which I'm okay with, because I believe the Spirit is in all those things. But it got the identity of it as being a part of the church got stripped away so much that it became anti-church. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of church movements that are like, don't do Halloween. And it's like, we actually have a liturgy for Halloween.
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, so it comes back to what Mark was talking about is all these beats that we have, the church still lays an impression of all these things. And I think we need to look at them with that intent more. So I'm really glad we brought that up, that all those things really come from that.
Yep, absolutely.
I'm glad you brought that up too, because that actually is going to tie into our topic next week.
Great.
So hold that thought.
That's 7 whole days away, Mark.
So in episode 7, we did best supernatural event from the Bible. And today we are covering the best supernatural event in church history. Nick, did you have a hard time finding what you wanted to talk about?
I didn't, because it was one that just always kind of stuck out at me, which is really interesting because it doesn't connect with who I am that much.
Okay.
But I always found the topic extremely interesting.
Mm. Okay. What about you, Mark?
You know, it took me just a little while. At first, I was inspired by the challenge of this one, and I came away from when we were picking the topics and dividing it up, I came away not knowing what I was going to do. But it took me just a little while to think. And then this one appeared to me much in this. Well, no, my topic involves an apparition.
Okay.
So. I was going to say, is your topic like something that happened to you?
No, definitely not something that happened
history.
To me.
Yeah, exactly.
In my own church history.
Yes.
This is the best one.
That's how you knew you'd beat me.
Autobiographical.
Yeah.
No, no.
In each episode, our two guests will present their case. We'll talk a little about it. And after the episode, you will vote on who told the most compelling story. I'm the only person who knows what story each person is going to tell and who will go first. Until now, Mark, would you like to present your case for the supernatural event?
All right. I have not gone first yet.
So. No. I haven't either.
All right.
What's up?
Well, so my event, and let me just, can I be a total nerd for a second?
Oh, that's fine. First. I'm going to caveat it up, and I'm going to bury the lead big time.
I have a little aside.
Okay.
Is everybody, collective eye roll in the podcastosphere, but I'm using the word supernatural a little reluctantly.
Yeah.
For the same reason that I don't like to use the word miracle. Because if we believe that the claims we make about God are true, then these events that we're talking about are simply signs of God being alive and working in creation. So they are, in fact...
I don't know if the mic can hear my eyes roll.
Yeah. Natural rather than supernatural. But, so there's my little aside.
That's fair.
My little nerd moment.
That's a little bit of how Dixon sort of addressed his opinions about what is supernatural.
On with the business, though.
Yeah.
Because this is pretty, pretty amazing supernatural stuff.
Okay.
So, the four appearances of the Virgin Mary to Juan Diego in 1531, and the cloak, which is known as the tilma of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Okay.
So.
I'm not surprised that you picked that. I mean, it's part of who you are.
That kind of Spanish-American thing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well.
That's good.
So here's a little background, just when I was doing my homework and brushing up on the story, what I thought was really cool. So the Basilica of Guadalupe in Mexico City is the most visited Christian shrine in the world.
Oh, wow.
And it is the third most visited sacred site, the Meiji Shrine in Japan. And I have not heard of this one. The Kashi Vishwanath Temple in India are more visited. But among Christian sacred sites, the Shrine of Guadalupe is the most visited Christian shrine in the world. So what is it?
And that's taking Walmart out.
Right? Yeah, that's
sorry. Mark and I used to do a podcast together. Oh, we're totally comfortable.
Oh, Lord, don't even bring that up. So, for the background, we've got to go to Spain for a second before we get back to Mexico.
Yep.
Because there is a monastery with a shrine in central Spain called the Monastery of Guadalupe. It has a shrine to the Virgin Mary, and it's the most important shrine to the Virgin Mary in Spain. Because in the middle of this monastery, in the chapel, there is a statue. It's a very ancient statue. Nobody knows how old it is. The legend is that it was carved by Luke the Evangelist. And then this monastery was built around it. So there's that. So Guadalupe is in Spain. So now let's go to Mexico. It's the 1520s, so about 500 years ago. And Hernan Cortes, the conquistador, has defeated the Aztec Empire in 1521. And after he defeats the Aztec Empire, he establishes the province of New Spain under the rule of the Spanish crown. Closely behind, so throughout the 1520s, here comes the Catholic Church. Missionaries, building many churches, establishing dioceses and bishops, becoming the established religion in the Spanish Empire, the whole lot. So now we're going to 1531. So it's 10 years since the Aztecs have been conquered. The Catholic Church is putting a toehold in the country. They're starting this project of building churches. The Franciscans have come in and established missions, and they're starting schools and teaching people. And we have a peasant who is, nobody knows how old he is. He's middle-aged, whatever that means. And his name is Juan Diego Cuauhtlatoatzin. And he's this peasant who has been baptized by the Franciscans. And on December 9th in 1531, he's walking on a hill outside of what is eventually going to become Mexico City. And he has a vision of a young woman. She speaks to him in his own native language, which is Nahuatl is the name of the language. She identifies herself as the Virgin Mary, the mother of the true God. And she asks Juan Diego, this indigenous peasant, to build a church on that hill. Being a newly baptized, earnest kind of peasant, he goes to the archbishop in Mexico City. I think the true miraculous part of the story is the archbishop agrees to see him. But he goes to see the archbishop. He tells him this story. And what do you think the archbishop says? Exactly. Right. Go on. So he goes back. And he finds himself on that hill again. And then wouldn't you know, the Virgin Mary appears to him again, a second time, and says, try again. Go back. So he does. He goes back to the archbishop. For some unknown reason, the archbishop grants him another audience. He tells them the story again. And something at this point clicks in the archbishop's head. He's, oh, I remember the story of Samuel in the Old Testament. He says, okay, go back a third time. If she appears to you a third time, ask her for some kind of tangible sign and bring that to me. Juan Diego goes back. Sure enough, she shows up a third time and he says, hey, I need some proof to take to the archbishop. And she tells him, okay, come back tomorrow and I will give you a sign that you can take. Well, there's a wrinkle in the story. Tomorrow, in that narrative, Juan Diego had an uncle who fell very, very ill. His name was Bernardino. Bernardino became very ill, and Juan went to his bedside to help, you know, nurse him and tend to him, and in so doing missed his appointment with the Virgin Mary.
As one does.
As one does, yeah. And his uncle was close to death, so he went to find a priest for last rites, but he knew that he missed his appointment. It's not like he forgot. He was like, ah, this appointment. So, but he was ashamed, and so instead of taking the most direct route, which is to go on that same hill again, he went around a different way so that he wouldn't run into her and be like, oh, I missed. Well, she found him. She was on the other route too. And she stops him and says, I'm your mother. Am I not here? I'm going to take care of you, and I want you to do this mission. So she says, come with me right now, climb the hill. You will, this is, remember, this is December. You will see flowers blooming, and I want you to collect the flowers, put them in your cloak, and take them to the archbishop. Sure enough, he goes up on the hill, and there are flowers blooming in December, but they are flowers that are native to Spain, not Mexico. These roses. So he picks them up, wraps them in his cloak, and goes to the archbishop. The tilma is the name for the cloak, and that's what they call this object, the tilma. When he opens it up, the flowers collapse onto the floor, but on the inside of his cloak is now this painted image of the Virgin Mary. Here's the after story. The next day, he makes it back to his uncle's house. His uncle has fully recovered and tells him that the Virgin Mary appeared to him at his bedside to say, all will be well, and ask that she be known by the title Guadalupe after the shrine in Spain, which neither of these guys probably knew anything about. The archbishop kept that cloak. Natch, you know,
sure,
give me that, take it. Yep. But he kept it, and he had a church built on that hill that housed the cloak. Over time, the church was enlarged, and in the 1700s, a very large basilica and shrine was built on that site. And in the 1970s, they built a new one next door. And in 2002, Juan Diego was canonized as a saint by the Catholic Church. So, what's the big deal? Well, on one side, we have the Virgin Mary appearing to an illiterate Native American peasant, which seems to predate the whole, this is long before, you know, liberation theology, which is a Spanish American movement in the church that says that God has a preferential option for the poor. And this points to a lot of those same themes. The Virgin Mary didn't appear to the archbishop. He never saw her. She appeared to Juan Diego and spoke to him in his own indigenous language. So this has become a movement, it's become a symbol for the Mexican people specifically, and all of Spanish America more generally, to say, hey, indigenous people are fully part of this project of the kingdom of God, of the church, of society. So it became a cry for them as a people to stand up and say, we have dignity. Mm. It has become a symbol, like I said, for the Mexican people. Juan Diego is the first saint indigenous to the Americas. But let's get back to the supernatural part. That cloak is still there. Ooh. It still exists, hanging in the shrine. It's 500 years old on a piece of fabric. And people, artists have come along and done touch-up jobs. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is the touch-up jobs have all faded away. But the original painting looks like it was done yesterday. Mm. The paint hasn't faded. People have done like chemical analyses and artistic analyses on this cloak and on the painting on it. And they can't figure out what's going on. Mm. It is a true mystery. It's just this. And so, you know, every time you see this image everywhere of the Virgin of Guadalupe, that is a rendition of the original, which is on this piece of fabric that's 500 years old hanging in the shrine.
Wow.
So there it is.
Very cool.
And Diego is still there, alive. But if he crosses the seal, that's when he dies.
I get it mixed up. Is the cloak supposed to have any like special?
People have. Yeah, I mean, there are, and one of the reasons why it is so, honored, and you know the numerous popes have talked about its importance and kind of given their seal of approval on this devotional tradition. Is that there are accounts of people going and praying at that shrine and, you know, being healed of illnesses and, you know, not unlike Lourdes in France, where that water, you know, seems to have healing properties.
Interesting. So, Thank you, Mark.
It is also one of the Deathly Hallows.
It's one of the Deathly Hallows.
So,
who knows? It's how you get invisible.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Nick, did Mark convince you?
It's a great story. Yes. I mean, Mark's a good storyteller anyway.
Yes, absolutely.
And when he speaks Spanish, I mean, it's so awesome.
I didn't even bring in the Spanish. I have the line from the Virgin Mary to Juan Diego. I should read.
Okay, before you do that, let me give a little thing. So Mark read at both my ordinations because the diocese wanted Spanish speaking, whatever. And I'm like, of course, Mark's going to do it. Mark has this gift where he speaks Spanish. It's almost like when Buzz Lightyear switches over and it's this deeper, like, you know, very, you know, Latino, you know, hot voice that he does. And he sounds like Spanish Buzz Lightyear. Okay. So with that, go ahead.
Okay. Take it away, Spanish Buzz Lightyear.
So when this is when Juan Diego's like going around the hill because he's embarrassed.
Yeah.
And she stops him on his B route. And she says, "No estoy yo aquí, que estoy tu madre." Mm-hmm. "Am I not here, who am your mother?"
Interesting. That's nice.
See how that happens?
I like it.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
some good podcasting material right there.
There you go.
Very good.
All right,
Nick.
Take it away, buddy.
Mark, do you want intermission music? I still have that on my phone. So just a little thing. Mark and I used to do a podcast.
I think we got one episode.
Was that like your theme song?
No. actually think
that's,
we have
Peppy.
Yeah.
No. We did use this too, if you remember.
Oh, I forgot about that.
The X-Men theme? No, so we did a podcast with James Franklin, and it was like nerd culture and theology. It was called Batman, Beer, and Bart.
Okay.
And we'll get it out now since we have two other podcasts. But we would do a little intermission, and I would play that old beer commercial, and then Mark would have a beer of the week. And he would, and then we would taste it, and you could, you know, that's there what it was.
Yeah.
So before we came in here, I'm like, I wonder if I still have that on my voice memo. And I still have that from
so
years
funny.
Ago.
I think we had two listeners, and their names were Dana and Sarah.
I will tell you, Dana did not listen. She thought it was lame. But I know Samantha did.
Okay. Samantha and Sarah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember James called me one day and said, "Hey, somebody went on our podcast and rated us and said it's really, really great." And I'm like, James, that was me. I'm trying to put some money in the tip jar to get it going. Neither here or there. So I think one thing we can take away from this podcast, regardless of who wins, is that the lack of conversation about what we would call the supernatural in our history, because it is a very real thing.
Yeah.
You know, as we move towards a post-modernity away from the, you know, stripping ourselves of the mysticism of Christianity. There is a rich history of all these really, really cool things. And so I really started thinking about, you know, what I want to do. This one popped up first, but there's so many other ones, you know, the warming of John Wesley's heart, which I actually think he was just heartburn. Sorry, Methodist. You know, I was joking with Mark because he said, I have a really great one. And I said, how about the resurrection of Jesus Christ? And that's a pretty good one. And he goes, that's not part of church history. So for those of you listening,
it's in the Bible.
Apparently, according to Dr. Mark Autry Graves, the life, listen, of death and resurrection of Jesus Christ is not part of the history.
Context
of the
is important.
Yes.
Context is always important.
I mean, you really could have done low hanging fruit and said Pentecost. Even though it's in the Bible, it's the birth of the church, and that's a pretty miraculous thing. And the reason why I bring that one up is because it really does connect with the one I did. Okay. And what's interesting about this story is it has no connection with my tradition, where I came from, but I always found it fascinating. And then maybe we can have a conversation on when really good, awesome things happen, how we kind of take them and over-humanize them to the point where it kind of strips it of its dignity. And one of these virtues, of course, is that of glossolalia. Mm-hmm. We talk about that. And as Episcopalians, we don't talk, or speaking in tongues, excuse me. We talk as if that's not a part of our tradition because other traditions use that way more. And that's actually not true. But I think that some traditions have taken that idea and ran with it and moved from signs of faith to I have to have it for certainty. Mm. And so that's kind of the thesis of my story. And I'm burying the lead only because my story is not that long. But it starts about 100 years ago with William Seymour, who was a young, what we would call Pentecostal preacher. He went to school in Houston. He traveled all over. And in the turn of the century, 1905, 1906, he went to California to preach. And my wife is calling me. And so what had happened was, is he would preach about speaking in tongues. That was very much a part of that movement at the time. And what was interesting is he was invited to preach at on Bonnie Bray Street, which is in Los Angeles. And he preached. And the next day they had kicked him out and locked him out because they discovered that even though he had preached about speaking in tongues, they found out that he had never actually spoken tongues. So how can you preach about speaking in tongues if you have never spoken in tongues? Blows my mind because I preached about it. I have not spoken in tongues that I'm aware of. And so then they find this other place a few days later on Azusa Street, which is one of those big watershed moments, not just for the Pentecostal movement, but just going back to the moment of Pentecost in general. And so what happened on Azusa Street is they started doing revivals. And eventually, William Seymour actually did speak in tongues. So apparently he could actually preach about it then. But what was really fascinating about the story is that this revival went on for a very, very long time. They started it in 1906. As a matter of fact, they started it 4 days before the earthquake in San Francisco. I'm not saying they're connected, but who knows? And it lasted for 9 years to 1915, every day, straight up.
Whoa.
All the time. And it wasn't just William Seymour. There were other people that came in. There's stories of young children just going up to the pulpit that were just made of box crates and would just preach for hours. And a lot of them spoke in tongues. But and then they have these crazy stories, and I don't mean crazy in a bad way, of all this miraculous healing, people growing limbs back, people you know, being cured of all these diseases there, you know, getting their sight back. There's a story of one woman who went up to the piano, never played in her life, and just started playing, you know, like she, you know, like she had always played her whole life and played during the service. And this lasted for 9 years, which is crazy. So there's three, I think, big miracles in this thing. Is one, it lasted 9 years.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine. Jason's like shrugging over the idea of being in church for 9 years. Totally with you.
Sounds horrible.
Even though I feel like I haven't left this building for 9 years sometimes. You know, the second thing is that much church in California is crazy. I'm just kidding. I'm teasing now. There's two Californians in here right now. But also is the racial reconciliation that was going on. Because what had going on, this is the very beginning of Jim Crow, right? Reconstruction is over. As a matter of fact, Seymour, when he went to seminary, had to sit outside the door to listen to Charles Parham, which was a big professor and preacher at the time, Pentecostal preacher. And he was allowed to sit out there because, again, Jim Crow laws in Texas. And then they go to California. And it really was a revival that consisted of wealthy people, poor people, Black people, white people, Hispanic people, all coming from different parts and worshiping for 9 straight years. And so there's this moment, this watershed in time where all those things came together, and it just reverts back to what Pentecost was about to begin with, which were all these people speaking in different languages, coming from different places, but also being able to understand each other, right? Which is miraculous in and of itself, which kind of gets me to the criticism of what comes out of Azusa. Even though I believe in the supernaturalness of this, and I think it's a beautiful story, and I encourage anybody to watch any YouTube videos or read, you know, whatever you want online. I mean, there are some beautiful stories about it, but the concept of glossolalia has always and been understood as, and when people speak in other languages that they don't know and they don't understand, but other people do. Because it breaks down the walls of language and tradition, hearkening all the way back to the Tower of Babel, right? Is the Tower of Babel was built to go to God. God destroyed it and said, y'all are going to be dispersed through the nations and you're not going to know what each other are saying. Pentecost is the culmination of that and says, actually, now that we speak in all these different languages, we understand each other because something has happened. Glossolalia, or speaking in tongues, is supposed to reflect that understanding that there are no boundaries before us anymore. We are living in the kingdom that is here and is coming. What has happened with speaking in tongues is that people get so concerned about having to do it that it has turned into just speaking in another foreign language that's kind of made up with nobody there to interpret it, which is not what the point of it was. And that's the struggle I have with what came from this. Like all good ideas, other things come from it. But it really is a beautiful story in the sense that all these people coming together and really showing what the kingdom is supposed to look like and doing it in California for 9 years.
Wow.
It's just baffling.
Do you know if it actually happened in the city of Azusa?
It was on Azusa Street. If Azusa Street is, I'm pretty sure that's in Los Angeles.
Azusa's pretty long.
Yeah.
I wonder if it actually happened in Azusa. Interesting. So,
yeah. The house is not there anymore. As a matter of fact, it's a parking lot. I went to see where it was. I was seeing that it was a museum, which reminds me of that Joni Mitchell song, maybe, you know. But I know there are signs, but that's a really good question. But,
yeah, because there's a big Christian university there now, Azusa Pacific.
Oh, I'm sure it's coming from it. Is it a Pentecostal university?
It's a good question. I think it might be.
I think it's a Pentecostal.
Interesting. Church. And I didn't, as a resident from Southern California, I didn't realize that there was a Pentecostal movement in that area.
Huge. I mean, that was one of the biggest moments of Pentecostalism coming. I mean, because it was fairly new at the time. Mm-hmm. And that Azusa thing was, that thing happened for so long that it spread like wildfire through the U.S. And I would even make the argument that Pentecostalism probably wouldn't look like what it is today without that there. You know, it's something they refer back to all the time.
Interesting.
So, and again, it's interesting in the sense that when I had read or heard the story for the first time, I thought it was so fascinating, and yet has no connection with me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not Pentecostal. I know family members that are Pentecostal and they speak what they would call in tongues, and it's
Carol, they might be listening.
Yeah, no, they're not. I promise you. you know, and again, I don't want to criticize that, but there is the idea of that's what the intention of speaking in tongues is to break down that barriers of the differences between nations.
Not to stand apart as being different, but to connect.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think there are moments in our history in which these supernatural things occur. And I think there's this pressure for us to witness these things or participate in them ourselves in order to feel the assurance of the Holy Spirit and God still working in the world. And I think going back to connecting with all saints and all souls is that we are inherently still a part of that story, that we may not have been there, but we're still connected to that. So we need to walk that fine line of having to have those signs of certainty and just live that line of faith.
Nick has managed to turn this into a sermon.
What's up? God, I had so many good like quips I was going to give you, Mark. I was going to tear you down. But they're both really good stories. And
they're very different stories. You know, we ended up in very different. And yet, there is a thread going between.
Yeah.
You know, this idea of communication and understanding. Yeah. And, you know, the Virgin Mary speaks to Juan Diego in his own oppressed language, really. She could have spoken to him in Spanish. And even though the, you know, the little line I gave in the tradition of the story is that phrase in Spanish, but that's a translation from the original Nahuatl that she spoke to him in. Yeah. Because he spoke both languages. Mm-hmm. And since Spanish and, you know, Latin was the language of the church, the expectation would be that she would speak to him in Latin or maybe Spanish. Mm. But, you know, so again, this idea of breaking down the barriers and communicating the sense of belonging.
Yeah, it's really neat that, I mean, we come from Duke, which is a school of thought of language that defines people. You know, if you've ever read Lindbeck, which is probably the thickest 90-page book you could ever read in the history of man, you know, and how that connects with who we are as, in, cognitively, but also our traditions as well, and how the ideas of Pentecost or Mother Mary coming and breaking down those walls reminds us that God's kingdom is bigger than those individual traditions, that God connects us all through all those, which I think is really important.
Yeah. Awesome. So. Thanks, guys.
Any other things? Because it's only 40 minutes.
Yeah.
No, you're good.
Dun, dun, dun. Just keep in mind, Mark doesn't think Jesus is a part of the church.
Listen, that is not what I said. That is never what I said. I was simply trying to call Nick to task to follow the rules of the podcast.
Nobody actually believes that, Mark. Calm down. Nobody's going to listen to this and be like, Dr. Mark Audrey Graves doesn't believe Jesus.
I have been misquoted. It's like talking to journalists. Talking to priests is like talking to journalists.
Listen. I'm not saying it's true or false. I'm just throwing it out there to question. We all have our own truths. We all have our own facts.
Well, on that note, the cases have been presented. Now, listeners, the power is in your hands. In the episode description and notes is a link to a poll. Let us know who you think told the most compelling story. We have a bunch of great episodes coming up as we move towards Advent, a lot of which will be featuring Mark and Nick.
So if you liked this one, because there's more where this came from.
Please like and subscribe and rate. If you want to hear more, you can learn more on our webpage, thematchuppodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at thematchuppod. Also, make sure and join our Facebook group, The Matchbook Podcast, for extra information about the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening and voting. See you next time.